You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
How many adventurers are we then?
This completes our company.
I'm glad mischief is best enacted in small groups. At very close quarters, don't you think, Mr. Chandler?
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 69, Be Quiet, for the week of February 11th, 2015. I am waterlogged prostitute David T. Cole, and I'm here with pneumatic tube Sarah D. Bunting.
Shoop.
Creepy doll collector Tara Ariano.
They're totally normal dolls.
And...
oh, man.
Doop. And anachronistic can of Glade in Dorian Gray's orgy room, Matt Denham.
Hello.
Not even close.
Right off.
I told you I screwed it up. I told you it would happen, even though I got it right in the pre-show. It's Matt Debenham. Matt Denham.
Yep.
Nope. That's pretty
that's
good.
Better. I mean, it's better.
That's for anyone who heard Tell AmeriCorp 500 times in the all game mini. That's very, very close.
Look, we try.
We will welcome Matt properly in just a moment, but first we have some site business up top. Thank you, everyone, for being so patient, not that you had a choice, with our long hiatus related to Dave's computer. It now has a new hard drive and I assume has had an enema and is running better than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have a new we have a new phrase that doesn't pay. The last one, did we announce it in case you didn't listen to the game episode?
Right. It was Madonna's wiry arms.
Yeah,
right?
Madonna arms right. Was the one that was guessed. So there is a new one in play as of today. And then a little bit of site business. One thing is I will be on a panel this year at the ATX Festival, the TV festival in Austin, where I also was last year. So if you're there... come out to my panel or the panel I will be on. It's not my panel on June 5th, along with Danny Feinberg from HitFix, Tim Goodman from The Hollywood Reporter, and I feel so bad.
Other people.
Others. Oh, I think it's Todd Vanderwerf from Vox and me. And the other thing is we will have some exciting stuff to announce next week, but a teaser is there may be more podcasting in your life. Very, very soon. And also next week, we get back on our regular recording schedule on Mondays plus four minis.
Right. So hurry up and listen to this one because so there's another one coming at you in a couple days.
That's right.
John Ramos and Mad Men Finale.
Well, I wasn't going to say what it was, but probably people could guess that would be what we would be discussing.
Yeah.
This week, we are discussing Penny Dreadful, and which is why we are welcoming Matt Debenham to the podcast for
that's
the
right.
first time.
Debenham.
Welcome, Matt.
Thank you for having
no
me.
No pun intended. Matt has taken over
I've heard
coverage.
That so many times, it just blew past me.
I really did not mean to say it like that. I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to be a dick this time.
Dick.
But since you are covering Penny Dreadful for us on previously.tv, we wanted to have you on to talk about it. So welcome.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Matt, I really enjoyed your season two opener article. And I just wanted to say at the top of the show that something that you wrote in that one, which really stuck with me and I hadn't really thought about it, which is the leisurely pace that Penny Dreadful takes. And with other shows, I find I would be frustrated by it. But with Penny Dreadful, I enjoy it. It's like a nice cup of like sipping hot chocolate or something like that. You know,
yeah.
Like it's rich and it works on a slow trickle rather than having to be another one of TV's like crazy bonkers. Everything's happening all at once kind of shows.
Well, yeah, Matt, you previously covered True Blood for us. So maybe you could compare and contrast.
I was just going to say that that's the perfect comparison. It is like a cup of hot chocolate that you're sipping in, but then there's like an eyeball at the bottom of it. But the thing about Penny Dreadful that I think True Blood is absolutely the most apt point of comparison is that Penny Dreadful is never in danger of burning through story.
Right.
And True Blood, meanwhile, I think halfway through its first season, it had sort of exhausted most of its possibilities and then just kept going on past that. So there are a lot of shows that are like that. Lost did that for sure. Shows where you're like, this is spinning its wheels. And Penny Dreadful takes its time, but it's layering. And yeah, that's a different thing. So the episode coming up this weekend, for instance, I have seen it through the magic of previously TV's connections, and it's a bit of a step back. It's very nearly a bottle episode, but it counts for a lot, and it fleshes out a lot. And that again is the big difference for me between Penny Dreadful and I gave up on Orphan Black two episodes into the second season because I was like, they are not interested in me knowing what's going on at any single point. I heard the podcast about it.
You're not wrong. Yeah.
No,
I salute all of you for still watching it because I am that dope. who watched for the story.
Yeah.
And then was like, ugh, this is not for me anymore.
Right. Yeah. No, totally get it.
I have actually quit it since we spoke about it. I was like, you know, no, this is like a mimeograph of what happened before. But anyway.
Yeah. But Penny Dreadful's not doing that at this point. And in fact, I was very afraid when it opened. I was like, oh, okay, so they're going to go back to, they're looking for Mina. They've got demons to deal with. But they're doing it in a much different way this season. It's nice.
What I like about this season, and I didn't know I missed it until it became apparent, which is I like having a face to the evil side of the equation, which in the first season, there's just this, you know, we still don't know, haven't seen the face of the master. But at least we have a head minion to hate.
Mm-hmm. I just assume it's the guy from Buffy, don't you?
I would hope it. I hope it is.
This is going to be Mark Metcalf or whatever.
Yes. He really didn't get enough to do, did
no,
he?
It's
so
true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Madame Cowley this season is a great one. First of all, may I swear on this?
Yeah,
of course.
She's hot as shit for one thing.
She's smoky.
So there's that.
I think the word is smoky. She looks like, she looks, I don't know, what would you say? Like, experienced in such a like good, icky way.
That, well, we know that's what you like.
Yeah.
Going back to your Megan Mullally crush.
All right.
But but we all know that she's married to Damian Lewis in real life, right?
Oh, really?
I did not know that.
She is. Yes.
I didn't either.
Well, she is the real Mrs. Brody, the not annoying one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Another show I gave up on.
Nobody, yeah, yeah, everybody gave up on that one.
Yeah. Nope. Not everybody.
Really? Oh, that's right.
Two seasons in and out.
Someone's got to particle that shit.
I watched it all. Yeah, Dave and I were apart for the end of the season, so he didn't have the impetus to keep watching. But anyway, enough about Homeland.
Yeah, but no, she's a great great villain. I mean, only a couple episodes
really
in, she's great,
terrific. And again, like I'm three episodes in, and I don't 100% know all of her motivations. I don't know all her secrets and her weaknesses, and that's a very good thing.
Well, we saw we saw the teaser for this episode at the end of episode two, and so we know that it seems like it's a flashback to her meeting up with Patti LuPone, who's playing another kind of witch. And I just want to say, for the record, Team Crone. I'm definitely on the Patti LuPone side versus the sexy witches. Give me an old school like Macbeth, Craggy witch any day, personally.
Yeah, and this episode actually they play up the sort of that exact dichotomy between the sexy witch and the craggy witch, it's actually about Vanessa. It's a flashback to Vanessa seeking out basically answers to what the hell's wrong with her. She'd been institutionalized and traumatized and so forth, and now she's seeking answers from the supernatural side, and so she goes to the moors of West England to find this witch that she's heard about, and there's not too much to spoil, really. It's not a huge event filled episode, mm-hmm. but it's really great. I've seen it twice now, once while doing something and then once in earnest, and so it's really it's a solid episode, and Patti LuPone's great. And there's even a little bit of pro-choice messaging snuck in.
Oh,
wow. It's pretty interesting.
That's good.
Speaking of supernatural, since we're dealing with supernatural answers to Vanessa's character, do we find out the supernatural reason why her hair changes from neat to incredibly messy upon possession? Is there a little scene that explains that?
Pow, grease on.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
Well, and also how it stands on end. No,
she just that performance is kind of amazing. It's a very sweaty, breathy, growly performance that I don't know a lot of actors could get away with. Like with her again, like the thing about Penny Dreadful is like I buy most of this. It doesn't feel overwrought or ridiculous. And this is a show that, you know, that really plays with the overwrought and the ridiculous, but I feel like it kind of knows what it's playing in. And that's a big difference for this.
It's set up its universe well, and the characters live in that universe, and it all seems to make sense. And Vanessa and Eva Green's portrayal, there's one moment in, you're just talking about how she's like, you know, all in on this.
Yeah.
There's a moment when in the second episode where she is in talking with Sir Malcolm and just sort of having this, you know, this moment of weakness where, you know, she's just had this attack on her and she's just like, is this what it's like to go mad? And there's this gooey Foley sniffle work that she does. It's the snottiest thing I've ever heard on TV, but it's just this small moment. And I'm like, oh, that's like, it's so fitting for that character because she's just like, there's so much small physicality into when she's out of sorts. It really works. And that was a moment where it's like, wow, is there an Emmy for like snot work? Because that was great.
It's pretty good. I mean, I like that the show also has kept its focus on Vanessa versus the natural impulse to sort of follow, you know, the handsome werewolf cowboy, or, you know what I mean? Like the gunslinger guy or Sir Malcolm, like they could have gone a number of different ways, and they've really kept the focus and clearly doubling down early in the second season on Vanessa, which I think is smart.
And speaking to your stacking, is that now Vanessa is in contact with the creature. So now we're getting sort of more of a little more of a stew rather than soup, you know, like we're getting the ingredients, you know, coming together, but it's all sort of coming via Vanessa. So it doesn't feel disjointed like a lot, like say like Game of Thrones or something like that can, with so many characters where one's on one side of the world and the other one's on the other side of the world. And maybe they'll meet next season. Who knows?
You know, yeah.
It's not that kind of show.
And Vanessa and Madame Callie have already met. They met last season at the seance, and this episode we see some other close calls between them. So there's you're exactly right. There's, you know, they I'm trying to think of the creator, John Logan, really seems to know what he's doing, and so I feel like I'm in good hands with this writer.
Can I say how much I love Mr. Chandler and Mr. Lyle together?
Good God,
oh, Mr. That was great. Mr.
Ferdinand Lyle is like a Paul F. Tompkins character.
Yep. He is. That's a perfect analogy. So true.
Just
they were adorable.
With this crazy mustache. Yeah. He's just, he looks like something that sort of fell out of the Land of Oz.
Uh-huh.
and into Victorian England. And he's just so great. I really want him to stick around for the entirety of season two.
I enjoyed how tickled Ethan was by him. Like just thought he was a delight.
Again, that's what I like about the show is that it has these small moments. Like there are times, certainly in the first season, where, and that's a tough thing because in a first season there's so much to establish, and so there's not a lot of time for nuance. And yet it took the time, especially late in the season, to have these moments where Ethan is showing Dr. Victor Frankenstein how to shoot. That was a nice moment between them, you know, a little bit of camaraderie. There was some sweetness and some funniness. And then, yes, the Ethan and Ferdinand on their quest to the museum, pretty great. So, I like all the ingredients in this show. I really do.
Agreed.
I also like that it's shot extremely well for atmosphere, but I find it's a very difficult balance with some of these like atmospheric period shows between like there's so much work and research, obviously, that's gone into the production design and the set dressing and the costumes and all of that stuff, which I love. And I stuck with Boardwalk Empire for way longer than I should have, mostly for that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's very hard for these productions to not step back and like be admiring their own work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I found myself repeatedly pausing to look at things like the Ripper display in the,
the wax museum,
which was accurate. And he did like this little piece of housekeeping with it where like her guts were like a sausage link or something. And he like, juiced one, which I was like, that's so wonderful. But then I would have to pause it because the story was not pausing to be like, look at how well we did. And like, I'm a true crime person nerd. So I like knew which murder it was and could tell that it had been done accurately. And they dropped like one reference to it, which I was like, someone bothered to look that up. Thank you. And the show like immediately had me on its side. Like, I actually think Madame Kelly is super annoying, but I get where it's going. And the fact that the show understands what it's about and what it's not about, and it doesn't like ask you to admire it too much, is, I think that's great and rare and difficult.
Yeah, I also like that they've sort of made the side characters, like other than Dorian Gray, the friends of the literary characters we know. So it's not like the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, where we're just waiting for people to fall into, you know, the stories that we know. So this is much more interesting to me, I think. And that was a very smart decision by someone.
Yeah, agreed.
Because Dorian Gray is already kind of, he seems like he's drifting out of the story. I mean, he did.
Yeah, a little bit. And it's, I've had a sneak peek at some of the, like, the Showtime, the photos that we're allowed to use, from upcoming episodes. And I know that there's definitely more coming from him and his new friend. But it does seem like they're not going to great lengths to keep him sort of jammed within the main story.
I'm not going to go great lengths or jammed about his new friend, even though you've totally set me up for it. I will not. I am too tasteful. Dave, you had a question.
It's hard is what I'm saying.
Yes.
It's hard to do that.
Yes, it is. It is.
And I get it.
I'm sorry that he seems
speaking of sausage links.
Getting shafted by the main story. Uh-huh. Dave, you had a question about Ethan and the mechanics of his particular condition.
Mm.
Did I? I forget what it was. Remind
me. That was what I thought, but it wasn't about his clothing at all. It was about his facial hair.
Oh, that's right. So, So Mr. Chandler, we assume American gunslinger werewolf character. We've never actually seen his lupine transformation.
No, but it seems like
a given.
I mean, the wolves smelled him in the zoo. Come on.
Yeah. So he's got a mustache. And then when he becomes a werewolf and transforms back into a human, what's the physiology, what's the biology involved in bringing that mustache back to its human state, right?
So the rest of his hair retreating, leaving only the original mustache.
So if it's just a case of sort of like there is a hirsute memory DNA module in a werewolf. Okay, I can accept that. But does that mean when he becomes a werewolf, then there's a little bit more where the mustache would be on a werewolf? Does he have like a little more growth as a werewolf mustache? This is just something I was wondering. And maybe, hopefully, Penny Dreadful will, answer this very important question I have.
With a bottle episode.
Yes. It's called Chandler's Mustache. Episode, maybe could be the season finale. I think it's what everybody wants to know.
Coop, there he is.
So glad we only have to hear that one more time. Coop, there he is. Here we are a little bit later in the week than usual, but we just
even
watched
closer to the series finale of Mad Men.
The penultimate episode. Sarah, where do we stand on the likelihood, now that we've seen the penultimate episode, that Mr. Don Draper is Mr. D.B. Cooper. Your favorite theory. I can't wait till this is over, but take it away.
It is. I should say that it's funny because we had been off the air for a couple of 3 weeks, and then this the original story by Lindsey Green, which appeared on Medium.com.
In 2013, a long time ago.
Yeah, this is where I first read it, for the record. And I apologize to Ms. Green for thinking I read it on Vulture. It did seem like kind of a vulture-y throwaway thing that would have lodged itself in my brain instead of where I put my keys down. But that all blew up, and then there's people all over my Facebook wall like, how come you're not getting credit for this? I'm like, because it was first, and I miscredited it, actually. So that theory, all of a sudden, like, there was this wave of this theory on Twitter last week.
Yeah, it got rediscovered because I think she was interviewed by the Daily Beast last week.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's why, that someone dug it up. And also, for the record, I don't actually think this is going to happen.
But it's fun.
Yes.
But it's fun. And it was like, it was in the daily news. Like, my husband, the last person who reads a physical newspaper, spotted it in the daily news yesterday. It was like a list of 10 things that could happen. It was number 3. Yep.
What was number 1?
He dies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean,
that seems too easy to me. I don't think he's going to die.
I'm not sure they were in order of likelihood right. So much as in order of, like, I don't know, clickbait when it is on right. The website.
But, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or like a read our Don Draper theories on the front page, whatever. It's a tabloid. So as of the most recent episode, which was the series penultimate episode, we have the first scene, which is the dream sequence and the cops finding him and saying, you knew we'd catch up to you eventually. He was sort of heading in a westerly direction. Strictly speaking, he didn't make it because the car broke down. Now he has no car. That sort of makes it more likely to me that he's like divesting himself of all possessions and means of travel and like whittling it down to the one true outcome plan in which he will become D.B. Cooper. The problem, of course, is that I think a lot of things about Don Draper, most of them aren't super complimentary. I really don't think he, knowing about Betty's cancer, would not come back to New York.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Would he come back, decide they're better off with Henry or other relatives, and then leave again? Possibly. But whoever came up with the theory, which I think might have been a sort of hive mind thing, but speaking of Todd Vanderwerf, I think he did posit this on Fox last week, that Don comes back to write I'd Like to Buy the World a Coke.
Right.
I think is probably more likely. Revoltingly neat. I don't like it at all. But I think it's more likely than D.B. Cooper. That said, he's D.B. Cooper. Accept it. And also, please go to previously.tv and read the fine and extremely exhaustive list
of
all the plane references by our Roger Cormier. Yeah.
Wow.
Lovingly compiled and a total suck up job for his editrix, and it worked. Well done, sir.
Before we move on, Matt, you mentioned that you wanted to talk about this a little bit too, so let's do it here instead of in Around the Dial.
Well, I mean, I have my own theory.
All right.
Oh, please,
and it's one I haven't seen this theory before. I think it's pretty shocking, frankly, and shameful. I think it's shameful that no one in the internet editorial community thought of that. But let me set the scene for you. I think that the very end scene of the Mad Men finale, the title card comes up 1978. We open in a radio station office, Cincinnati, Ohio. A pair of plaid pants comes down the hall with a white belt.
Mm-hmm.
And a mismatched plaid shirt,
yep.
Possibly a paisley shirt.
Yes,
it's Don Draper.
Yep,
now known as Herb Tarlick.
Yep, yep. That's it. That's the
only possibility.
Yep,
the theme song says it all. Then town to town, up and down the dial, this is Don Draper 8 years later.
Oh my God, that's brilliant!
Because Herb's the sales guy, right? That's his job.
Herb's the sales guy.
So it's
perfect. His whole job.
Absolutely.
We Be the Cadillac of Worms.
Yeah. the Cadillac the of Worms. The Cadillac of Worms. Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant.
He's now doing ad sales.
Oh yeah. My God.
If he could sell fur coats, he can certainly sell radio ads.
This is where he is. This is where he's ended up.
We have any video editors in the audience? Can you just like stick Don Draper's head in the credits over Herb Tarlick for WKRP in Cincinnati? I will give you Clark Moore stuff. Please make that happen. All right, everybody, it's time to go around the dial. We're going to start with Sarah.
I will also add the Daily News, I believe, pasted the whole family's photos onto the last scene of The Sopranos. So that's also in play, I guess. Ha ha. Today in Around the Dial, I'd like to talk about shows that start with F and wasted excellent concepts starring the following and Finding Carter. The following is about to end in a few days. Thank the good Lord. But what a waste of a concept and a wonderful cast. Like, the fact that James Purefoy was visibly looking for the exits in his last couple of episodes. I mean, it's really like killing a unicorn. It's so sad. Like, you have this great cast. You have a great concept. Like, the FBI is tracking down this cult leader. And, like, he's going to form a different cult every season. And then all the characters are extremely stupid. The plot is extremely stupid. They keep killing acquaintances of mine who are day players. It's terrible. They're running the episodes off in like 4-hour blocks. They're so eager to get rid of it. It's not great. I'm glad they ended it, but it really was a wasted concept. And then, speaking of the FBI being completely incompetent, Finding Carter, the MTV fictional story of a young lady who was kidnapped by her... the egg donor, who I guess donated both her and her twin sister when she was like 3. And then she's reunited with her family and she doesn't like it. What? So much storytelling potential crazy. There. Mm-hmm. And Milena Jovovich actually being a good actress, or not as Jovovich-y as she has historically been. Yep. But they don't seem to understand how any parent has ever acted, or how law enforcement would not just be told to drop the case. And it's like, I convinced them to drop the case. It's kidnapping. You don't just drop. It's really sad. And this is another one where, like, you almost don't notice until you're kind of writing down what you're going to say about it the next day, that the show actually totally doesn't hold together at all. And it's only people's extremely pretty hair, usually mm-hmm. the dudes.
Yeah.
And some really good acting by the kids in the core that make you keep watching it. But, I mean, what a waste. Like, what a story. And then it turned into this crazy sub-Dawson's soap opera, Free Alexis Denisov. I'm done.
All right, next up is Matt.
I guess I'll pick up that dropped mic. Nurse Jackie, last season. The final season, rather. Yeah, it's this show has never really risen above a certain level. And it's sort of, it had one story to tell, and it sort of has told both sides of that story, which is Jackie's addiction. My issue with Nurse Jackie is that she never gets so high that she's incompetent fully. Like, even last season when she screwed up, it wasn't something that you might not have done on an ordinary shift if you were overly tired.
Yeah,
like, she's taking massive amounts of opioids and the fentanyl patch, which is like 4 times or however many times like more powerful than morphine or whatever, and she's, you know, she's able to function. She's never not been able to function, which is bizarre to me, because mm-hmm. if you've ever seen someone sort of strung out on opioids, you know that they're in a hole pretty much all day.
Well, they gave me that when I had kidney stones and I could barely keep my eyes open.
Confirmed.
Like, it is no joke.
Yeah.
They had to keep coming and checking on me because my heart was slowing down so much they thought I was dying.
Yeah. It was like being married to a cat for a day.
Yeah.
So I think one of the strange things, about this show is that we've never seen Jackie hit what to the viewer would be a really recognizable bottom.
Yeah.
And so it's always been these sort of half measures, to call back to Breaking Bad. And it's been fun to watch Jackie sort of try and get out of, you know, out of these entanglements she finds herself in and scream people over. But then that stops being fun after a while. And at this point, I'm just watching for Merritt Weaver.
Oh, totally.
Who's the best thing in the show. She's amazing.
Bar none. Yeah, my favorite season was season 5, which I returned to after a long absence. I think I checked out sometime in season 2 and then came back because we got screeners. And that was so much more interesting to me because that was a season where she actually was sober.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You stop those Goombas.
Because which is like that's not an uninteresting struggle to be in sobriety, and also because it didn't like it didn't soften any of her edges either. Like she was still kind of the crabby jerk that she always had been, but now she actually had a struggle that was kind of underlying everything she did. And so when she took a pill at the end of that season, I was like, well, this could go either way. Maybe this is just one pill and she really can only take one pill. I'm so naive. Because then there was her whole, you know, season 6 was like the backslide that led to season 7. But yeah, it's hard to know how they're going to get themselves through this story. I don't know where else there is to go with it because so many of the people in her life are just done. So
yeah, it's just odd that they've never been willing. And this show has gone through so many different showrunners, executive producers, etc. And no one seems to have been willing. And maybe this is a thing that Showtime sort of hands down. They've never been willing to really go all the way with Jackie in terms of really, really letting her get just irretrievably fucked up.
Yeah.
And then seeing where she comes back from there. It's just never. She's always been a great nurse, mm-hmm. you know,
and she's never stopped being a great nurse. Too.
Overall, yeah, for sure. I mean, Grace is a horrible kid, so you know, hats off to Jackie.
Yeah, I agree.
Grace Grace belongs on Parenthood.
Wow, that is a strong indictment, but
that's how bad she is. Everybody,
I agree.
Do you have the Mario N theme there ready for us for this segment?
Do 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 do.
All right.
The good wife, finally got rid of Kalinda, the longest goodbye ever. We all knew it was coming for so long, and so it just felt so protracted, especially at the end. Like, I didn't ever really think that she was going to get killed by Lamond Bishop, and she wasn't. But I don't know that this, like, she slipping away to another life is really that much more interesting either, like her Shawshank Redemption exit from The Good Wife. And I'm incredibly mad that we're never going to find out what the deal is between her and Juliana Margulies. And
I will say
it's infuriating.
Since I've become aware of their little, you know, we'll not thing. Do any scenes together.
Yes.
It is a lot of fun to watch the scenes where they're together and just to see all the camera work and all the body doubles and all that kind of stuff that's going on where they never.
Well, they've mostly just been on they're on the phone if they haven't. Well, any interaction
there was a scene
all.
in a bar or something like that. Maybe it was a flashback to it. It looked like
no,
footage,
it was new,
but it was just like, you know, all right. Margulies is off the set, so let's bring in Kalinda now, and now you'll do your half of the shots, and we'll have a wig on a pole that'll be the good wife, and well, they'll shoot your side.
Yeah, we agree that they weren't in the same room, right?
Yeah. I don't know. The one where they're side by side, I think they were really side by side, but maybe, so. I mean, I just finished saying I was so naive about Jackie, so maybe
it's side,
about
no,
this
but
too.
That's a straight on shot. That's so easy to fake, whether it's not like it's a three-quarter
shot.
No,
you're right. They
could have something like
Patty
that.
Patty Duke showed it.
Totally.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway. But I'm as boring as this season has been, season 6 has been, I feel like everyone agrees, kind of the crappiest one. The idea ending it with her maybe setting up with Michael J. Fox's Lewis Canning is really intriguing. Like that's much more interesting to me even than her working with Finn. Because if they're not going to fuck, like, who cares? As the Fug Girls put it, like, they've left him on the completely unbanged, and that's not right. It's not right what they did to Matthew Good, or comprehensible for that matter. But I really I've always liked Alicia with Lewis, and I think that they did a good job, especially toward the end of the season, like showing how she respects him in a weird way, even for all his scumbagginess, and if he increases her scumbagginess, then so much the better, because that's much more interesting to watch. So we'll see how things go in season 7, but yeah, RIP season 6, no one will miss you.
Short one from me this week. We watched 30 Rock at night, you know, record the
We watched the WGN repeats.
and rediscovered one of my favorite characters, bit characters from 30 Rock, and I just wanted to play a clip from him. I forget even what the episode is about, but the character is Jerem,
yeah.
Who for some reason Jenna Maroney really needs his approval on things.
At this stage in the story, Liz has given up on future husband that she met at her endodontist's right. office, played by Michael Sheen. And so she's going on a lot of singles events and meeting a lot of weirdos.
That's
and
right.
so this guy shows up at two of the weirdo events that she goes to.
And now I present you my favorite line from 30 Rock ever in this clip.
Jerem, look how drunk I am and how full of cheese my mouth is.
That's not that much cheese.
He doesn't like you, he's probably after me. He doesn't like fun, that's plain to see. Time to ask, will they paint this?
Probably.
Sarah's presentation.
Okay, Sarah, take it away.
You all right over there?
Yeah, not really, but
okay, great. I present you and the assembled with Tupped, which is a Spike production starring Sir Ben Kingsley, not as King Tut, but as some other King.
A. His name's A.
I'm personage. Sorry.
Yeah, A-Y. That's his name.
A.
A.
And Alexander Siddig is also in it. I posit that Dave will not hate this because of Sir Ben, even though in the trailer it looks like Sir Ben hates this and himself for being in it. Uh-huh. It does look slightly better made than Olympus, which is my last submission and is saying almost nothing. But Egyptology, sword fights, Sir Ben. I tried to take this out of the dock, people, and they put it back in.
I'll put you out of your misery. Tara, do you have an argument on the other side?
You think he will hate this? You think he will not hate this?
Because I always take the wrong position, I had to say that he will not hate this. So you are arguing correctly that he will hate this.
I mean, I think there's a lot to like, but I think the issue here that might make Dave hate this is the Spike factor. This is a pretty ambitious project, even if it's a co-production with some British outfit, which I assume it is, judging by how not cheap it looks.
I think it is.
But the fact that it's not centered on the Ben Kingsley guy and instead on Tut, who's played by that little puke from that show Twisted on ABC Family that I watched one of and hated.
That little puke.
Speaking of shitty teenagers.
Are you a drill sergeant?
His name is Avan Jogia. I don't know how to pronounce either of his names. A-V-A-N-J-O-G-I-A. But he plays Tut, and the fact that it's mostly focused on him being douchey is probably what will make Dave not as into this as if it were about the power behind the throne. If it was Ben Kingsley's show, Dave would be all about it, I think.
So here's the deal. So King Tut, he was pharaoh for like a decade, and he started his reign when he was a kid and basically ended it when he died. And he was like not even 20 yet. So like 10 to 20, 9 to 19, something like that. Right.
Sounds like you're trying to teach me things, Dave.
And well, I'm just saying that boy kings don't really make for great biopics, you know, because you say boy king and entertaining, you say King Joffrey, and he's not real. And there's a reason for that, you know, because they just, when you have a boy king, the power is in the royal court. It's his advisors, is its regent, the regent queen or whatever.
His viziers.
Right? Yeah. So Ben Kingsley plays one of these guys. And if it was about him, that would be interesting, because who cares about this snot-nosed king, right? He's not really making real decisions. He's not really doing anything of import. And here's the other thing. Tut's parents were related.
How related were they, Dave?
They were Egypt. Lannister related.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well,
and so he is this inbred, sickly kid. He's not a warrior king. He doesn't have it in him. There's like 1,000 diseases people list as possible things that actually killed him. Like, it reads like a laundry list of, like, it's like the Mr. Burns thing where, like, he has so many diseases that it doesn't quite kill him right away. But as soon as one of them's out of whack, that's it. It's sort of like that. And there was a lot of pop history documentaries over the past 3 or 4 years that try to sell that he was assassinated because of, they did a CAT scan on his skull and there was some damage on the back that looked like it was basically somebody clubbed him or something like that. But, that it's probably, they were saying it's probably he was an epileptic and he probably fell and that's what started it and all this sort of stuff.
I thought you were going to say.
And there's healing and scarring, blah, 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 blah.
His skull just caved in. He had cavenitis.
he was so inbred, he had a second fontanelle at the back of his head.
A fontanelle.
It's called his face and L. You know what would be a good movie, though, is like the real story and why we care is all the treasures that were found in his tomb.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why it's Tut and not one of 20 better stories
Jehoshaphat or whoever.
Yeah, yeah. Like Ramses or even like Imhotep or something like that. He wasn't a pharaoh, but it'd be a more interesting story. And the reason we get Tut is because, well, Tut mania, we can see his treasures and that's really it.
Yeah.
And it looks really pretty. And Ben Kingsley is there looking like a grandma before she puts her makeup on in the morning.
You know? And her wig. Ow.
But you know that he's just going to be in 10 minutes an episode and he's going to come back out because that's all they could afford Ben Kingsley for. So I know you always get stuck with these, Sarah, but Tara is right.
This one to myself.
Dave.
Are you going to try to watch it, though?
Yeah, I'll watch the first one.
Yeah, I'll hate watch the first one.
I bet he'll watch all of it. I mean, you started watching Vikings not thinking that it was going to be anything, and then you liked it. Maybe it'll be good. Yeah. I this is one where I could have taken either position, really.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so Dave will probably hate Tut. All right, everybody, that means it's time for the canon, and Matthew Debenham.
Ooh, nicely good. Done.
Is it Matthew, fully, officially? Did I screw that up?
It's Matthew, but go on.
Has elected to pitch us something. Take it away, Matt.
I will. Thank you. Okay, so The Comeback, both seasons of it, is about 1990s sitcom actress Valerie Cherish. She's struggling to remain employed and visible in a Hollywood system that wants nothing to do with most actresses after 35, and I'm being generous here, let alone 40. It's also about her clueless but sweet stylist, Mickey, and one of the best, most unsung comedy performances of the last 20 years by Robert Michael Morris, who amazingly began his on-camera career in 2005 with the first season of The Comeback. If you read his IMDb, you don't even have to scroll. It's all one screen. Then there's Mark. That's Valerie's long-suffering husband and Jane, her reluctant documentarian. So at the end of the first season, Valerie had completed a humiliating return to sitcoms as Aunt Sassy, a character in the shitty sitcom Room and Board. Room and Board is canceled by the end of The Comeback's first season, but Valerie has a triumphant spot on Leno, which, as we know, fixes everything. Season 2, which takes place nearly 10 years later, sees Valerie starring in a new project for HBO called Seeing Red. This is a thinly veiled, wildly exaggerated account of the Room and Board experience written by Polly G., one of the sitcom's writers. He's sort of one of these sort of uber bro, tortured writer characters that you would see normally showing up in a serious light on a cable channel like HBO or Showtime. Polly G was battling a heroin addiction at the time of Room and Board and now seems to chalk up all his unhappiness to the difficulty of working with Valerie. Seeing Red is a pitch-perfect version of the edgy, blowjob-filled comedy dramas that seemed to populate HBO and Showtime for a while, but in the world of The Comeback, Valerie is nominated for an Emmy Award, meaning she's finally gotten what she really wants, right down to a huge ovation the minute she walks into the room at a Hollywood party.
Pool party. Oh, yeah. About the bass. About the bass. Oh. Okay. Who's this for? Who's here? Can you see, Mickey?
I think there's a boy over there who looks like it could be Tilda Swinton.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's you. They're clapping for you. Sure, Jasper. Oh.
Valerie gets what she really wants, and that's the name of the final episode of season two. It's like an extended length tour through a paradise Valerie has built, but one that kind of sits uncomfortably amid a reality that already exists. Her best friend Mickey has cancer, her husband's moved out, and while she's got an Emmy nomination, her newest show has been something of a test. She's been stuffed in the trunk of a car in the middle of the desert, she's been forced to simulate oral sex, and the entirety of Seeing Red is really about what a monster Valerie is in Polly G's eyes. This is pointed up in a conversation with Juno, one of Valerie's Room and Board co-stars. Valerie thinks Seeing Red is great because other people think it's great. Juno has a slightly more objective view.
My feelings were really hurt about something.
Something that I did?
Well, indirectly, maybe. I'm okay. Thank you. Thank you so much.
That's good.
I saw the show.
Seeing Red?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I'm really happy for you, Val. And I don't want to make this about me, but when I saw the show, it really hurt me.
Not you. You know, it's not me either.
So Valerie's about to leave this party to bring Mickey home. He has cancer, remember. When they get waylaid by Chris, Valerie's other Room and Board co-star. Played by
No way.
Sorry.
That's okay. So he's played by Kellan Lutz, handsome dude. Valerie's all set to leave anyway, but then Chris says the magic words.
You look so good. So good.
Tyler can drive Mickey home.
Yeah, and that's the other key to season two. So where Jane, the documentarian, was really reluctant to do what had to be done in the reality television business, here she started off refusing to even participate. She's got an Oscar. But by the end, she's actively manipulating these events to make more train wrecks and make more interesting television for this HBO documentary series she's making. So now she has a chance to make some serious cash, and she's not above compromising her principles to get it. That's a big change for Jane. Chris himself drives Valerie home later and insists on walking her to the door, where he makes the last of several very obvious passes at her.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I got to get up early. I've got the Emmys.
Come on. Let me come in.
No, I can't. Thank you, though.
All right.
Yeah.
I tried.
You tried hard. Yeah, you did.
Look, if you don't want anyone to see, I can go around back and pull myself up to the bedroom window.
And this is the other key, too, is that the comeback is shot documentary style, like a bunch of other stuff is. This was one of the very first shows to be doing that, though. This is back in 2005. And so everything we've seen through the comeback is that sort of shaky cam, digital video kind of thing. It doesn't look great, but it looks real. Keep that in mind. So on Emmy Day, nothing goes right. Valerie's husband, Mark, is AWOL. Mickey's condition is worsening, and he can't attend the Emmys that night with her. And right as she's trying to leave for the awards, Valerie's septic overflows to a devastating degree.
Oh, God.
No.
He's fun! Oh, this water! What is this?
Oh, now what? Where is this water coming from? All right, will you just run around, open the garage door, dear?
Yes.
You should have Billy deep six that ET crew. And you're not going to want them showing that Mickey footage.
Jane, can your agenda be any louder? No can do, okay? Brad's coming and he's expecting ET. Nice try. What?
That's fecal matter.
What? How? Okay. Stop screaming, dear. You gotta stop screaming.
Miss Vaughn, look. There is a hole in the wall.
I see it.
Call Mr. Mark. Call Mr. Mark.
Called him.
Help, Mr. Mark.
I've called him four times, okay? He's not returning.
Oh, God.
You
have to see that.
It's not fecal matter. It's like full turds that you can see.
They're like battleships, like hit by a tsunami going
down.
There's
no doubt about what is happening.
Yes. Oh, God. If anyone listening, if you haven't seen it, you have to find that clip and watch it. Make yourself watch it.
Yeah.
So Val makes it to the Emmys, though her camera crew gets kicked out. So Jane films from her seat using her iPhone. I'll let you do the clip.
Sorry.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Emmy Awards, celebrating the very best in broadcast television, cable, Netflix, Amazon, and the new Planters Peanut Channel. You laugh, but they launched an hour ago. They're doing well.
What I was going to say is that the iPhone, it takes it even further down in quality. And it intensifies the reality TV shooting style of the comeback. That's very important. So this is all Valerie's dream. It's all played out so far, almost as if she'd written it herself. But then that reality thing, that real reality thing, pokes through.
Valerie got a text from Mark.
But
Good luck. You left me alone on the biggest night of my life. That's right. Strong, beautiful women are allowed to run the government. Mickey collapsed at home and they rushed him to Cedars-Sinai.
Excited by the success of The Sound of Music in Peter Pan Live, NBC is hopeful it can get a comedy to stay alive longer than 4 episodes.
So this is everything Val's worked for. She's even the odds-on favorite to win her category. It's not a fluke. But Valerie Cherish isn't soulless, and though she may be hacky, she's not about to compromise herself.
Your way for so long.
Hurry back. I will.
So she leaves. She actually leaves the theater. She leaves the Emmys, and she leaves the confines of the documentary shooting style that has been our sole point of view for 2 seasons of The Comeback.
Mark, it's me. I got your text. So how is he?
So if it's not as stunning as Dorothy stepping out of her black and white house and into the Technicolor land of Oz, it's pretty goddamn close. More to the point, it's startling. It's like one of those films like The Purple Rose of Cairo or Pleasantville, where a TV version of something steps into the real world or vice versa. Only Valerie is stepping from the grimy, boxy POV of handheld digital and into something a little hypersaturated, gauzy, and stationary. There's no shaky cam in the final 5 minutes of the Comeback finale. Spoiler alert. In the end, Val goes to Mickey's hospital bedside where Mark's been sitting with him, and then she gets to have her cake and eat it too.
Anyways, the nominees are Laverne Cox, Orange is the New Black, Sofia Vergara, Modern Family, Julie Bowen, Modern Family, Valerie Cherish, Seeing Red, and Anna Chlumsky, Veep. And the Emmy goes to... Valerie.
I just smiled again. She even gets to give her speech, sort of.
I guess she's not here right now.
Oh, she's right here.
So I'll take this, and now I have earrings. Did you want to accept?
Or call me.
Okay. It didn't look like Valerie.
It's
good cover. It's a pro.
Well, how did you like that? Miss Cherish, speech please.
Well, thank you. And I accept this remote on behalf of the 2 most important men in my life.
Keep it down over there. Oh, show some respect. She's an Emmy winner.
I am.
And then Valerie walks off with Mark, having chosen her marriage and friendship over the one thing she's wanted more than anything over these 9 years and 2 seasons. And that's The Comeback.
Wow. That was lovely. Thank you.
So,
for submitting that.
Well, you're welcome. I couldn't believe it hadn't been submitted, truthfully. And maybe you guys will argue with me. But I think this episode belongs in the canon, just first of all, because it's a fantastic finale. Secondly, because of, you know, they can take something that we've seen before, which is so, you know, in as far back as the UK office, where he takes off his, I almost called him Jim, where he takes off his mic, to talk to her and to talk to Don. And we can't hear what's going on. Like, that was sort of a stunning thing. This is a sort of another version of that where she steps out of the documentary point of view, but it is just absolutely stunning when it happens. I don't know if you guys had felt the same way or not.
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead, Sarah.
We had talked about another. Did we vote that in or no?
I think we didn't, but that was a season 1 episode.
Right. And I had not, I don't follow the show regularly. And the first sort of 15 or 20 minutes is kind of what I like. I don't dislike the show, but it's like uncomfortable enough without being like quite on point enough that I was like, well, you know, I don't know. I mean, this seemed like more of the same, that it's like a good show. I get the joke. But meh. And then there's like a river of poo and someone falling in it, which, oh my God, that man's anguished. What the fuck? It's like the best.
When he pops.
If you can get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he's like, I saved it. Oh my God. So good.
I did GIF the fall when I wrote about the finale in December. So there is a GIF of that up on the site.
Good. Yes, the fall was amazing.
There needs to be. But the moment that sort of turned it for me was before she sort of had that Purple Rose of Cairo moment. Nice reference, by the way. But when he has the nosebleed and she's sort of doing this busy work with like the cold water or toothpaste or whatever, and Kudrow's face is just like there's like 14 different things going on. She's not making a big deal of it, but it's just really like you forget that she can do that too. Like and the opposite of sex, it's her doing nothing but that.
Yes.
Like in her sleep is why I love it. And you forget. And I was just like, I mean, it was destroying me. It was so good. Heartbreaking. Yeah.
That's that performance and this character, it's so easy to think like, oh, it's just another like, hyper driven, unself-aware character, driven and damaged and whatnot. But there's so much more to it than that. It's funny. She's never going to be the funniest person in the room. She is absolutely going to think that she is capable of being the funniest, or she's capable of being as funny as everyone else in the room. She's never going to be the smartest person in the room necessarily. But again, she doesn't see any of that. But at the same time, she really has a soul, and she actually does have, there's a person in there, and it's hard to get to. And I think that's what keeps people out a little bit about the show sometimes. But there's really smart about letting that show through, where you see like things really do hurt her and things really do affect her. And she isn't strictly about her own career as much as the people around her seem to think that she is.
Now, on paper, you would expect this series to be written much larger than it is. And that's what's surprising every time you come to this show, which is, you know, it is full of these small moments, these subtle moments. And, you know, in the contrast between the concept of the show and what, you know, the characters are doing on screen is like rather refreshing. And you do sort of magnify these moments, like that, like dichotomy between expectations and reality. Bad choice of words, reality. But, you know, that sort of like magnifies the delivery of these moments, you know, like with Mickey and these sort of like heartfelt moments in the show. And Lisa Kudrow, you know, who would have thought when you're watching Friends that she had all this in her? Not me. And I agree with Sarah that the opening of this episode doesn't really speak to the quality of, like, you know, the back three quarters of it. And if you start,
I think it's important that it's there though, because of that contrast, like,
yes,
it is a little impatience making to sit through, and just on their own merits, it's like, but yeah. I think it's important.
Well, yeah. In the first quarter, I mean, to speak to that, the first quarter is this Hollywood party in the hills where everybody's jockeying for position. Everybody's trying to be seen with everybody.
Everyone's named Sasha.
Everybody's named Sasha. Yeah.
People
don't know who people are. You know, it's very Hollywood scene, but it's just, that is the show I expected 100% of the time. That's the show I got to set up all the good stuff.
Yeah. Although it's funny because even that, if you've watched the show for the two seasons, you know that's Juna's house.
Yeah.
And that matters because she was like the bubbly co-star on Room and Board, the sort of girl who would do anything, completely unselfconscious, seems to have sort of an effortless career, which is a big contrast with Valerie, which is where it's all effort all the time. And Juna went on to become like a huge, huge movie star, and Val did not. And so even though Val has Seeing Red, that sort of was a fluke that's come out of left field. She hasn't worked a lot in the last 9 years, whereas Juna's become just massive. So even that has a little bit of weight to it. If you know the backstory, if you bothered to watch the other episodes, is what I'm saying.
I did watch the other episodes.
Excuse me.
Everyone was supposed to watch all 20 episodes or whatever of the comeback for this week's podcast.
Oops.
Well, I was prepared, and I know that there's a lot in the
Jesus.
Joking, of course. Everyone is joking. There is a lot in that conversation with Val and Juna that sort of ties up what got us to this point in this season, and like the hassles that, not hassles is a mild word, but what Val has gone through to make this show. And so when she says, you know, it's not me and it's not you either, like that's what she's been having to tell herself in order to get through it. Even if to hear her say it, it's like, does she actually believe that that's true?
Sorry.
What are you?
Ignore that.
Anyway, this was a great episode, an excellent choice, and I'm surprised that you picked this over the one where that you referenced where she has to go down on the guy that's playing the Pauly G character.
But where Seth Rogen gets her out of it, and it's so that's another like just it, the show can be really heartbreaking. Like to make for me, I'm not a Seth Rogen fan. Mm-hmm. To make me go, oh, at something Seth Rogen does is a feat.
Yeah, I wrote about every episode. That one in particular, I think it was interesting how they show him as a character that's himself, kind of like code switching between how to protect Valerie while also jollying Pauly G along in a way that's not going to make him feel threatened. That was interesting too. But anyway,
walking the bro line.
Yeah, but this what I liked about this one is not just that it did give Valerie her happy ending, although as I wrote at the time, I'm not sure that Mark is such a prize the way the show thinks he is.
I agree.
But she thinks he is, and that's what matters, I guess. But I like that it showed us what Val is like, not just in those little tiny snatches where she thinks the camera hasn't been on her prior to this point, but like what she really is like as a person. In an unmediated way, which is, you know, it's lovely. I mean, I did wonder because the lighting is so good compared to how it is in every other scene. If it's going to end up being like her Wizard of Oz fantasy, and then she ends up back in Kansas at the end. But if this is the way the series ends, I think that's a lovely way to end it.
I'd be great with that.
Yeah, and everyone got their comeuppance. Like she got to strand. She got to strand Jane at the Emmys. Pauly G humiliated himself on national television trying to go up and take her award. And Brad Goreski, who was so mean to her in his first appearance in the show, ends up covered in shit. So really, I got what I want, as well as Valerie.
Before we put this to a vote, point of order, that sound clip was me going into my browser earlier to see about the first one. We did induct that one into the canon.
Oh, I apologize.
Yes. And so, all right, vote time. Sarah, how vote you?
I vote yes.
I vote yes too, Tara.
Yep, me too.
All right. That means the comeback, Season 2, Episode 8, Valerie Gets What She Really Wants, is hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon. Thank you, Matt.
Yes.
Whoops. I screwed up the sound clip. Dun, 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 dun.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right. It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara, winners?
Well, dovetailing nicely with Valerie's canon win, ladies are the winners this week collectively, not just because a lot of lady-driven shows were renewed, including Agent Carter, iZombie, Nashville, and even though it's not my jam, Mysteries of Laura. But also, Shauna Hunt, a City TV reporter, was harassed outside of a soccer event in Canada, of all places.
Really?
Yes, and was captured on camera. This sort of went viral this week with the guys that she was trying to ask, you know, just do a man on the street interview with them. And they started doing some, I guess it's a Reddit thing, like yelling, fuck her right in the pussy over and over again.
Thanks,
and she
Reddit.
Was like, no. And she made the clip go viral, and the guy that led it got fired from his Hydro One job. So hooray, justice.
Yay!
For
women
all across television, even in Canada. Sarah.
The loser this week is American Idol, which has been canceled. And also viewers, because they didn't just cancel it. There's another season, so it's going to be this, like, Derek Jeter victory lap that's going to probably start in, like, 3 weeks. And it is kind of a shame. Like, I know it's business and the ratings have been circling the drain and whatever, but the current version of the show with Harry Connick Jr. and Scott the Borch Borchetta, who is this completely sugar-free mentor who's like, it's not about your art, bitch. It's about selling records for me and my company. I kind of like it. It's a lot more real, and I like Keith Urban and... I don't know. It's a shame. It's the end of an era, but I'll get over it.
Someone tweeted on, I think it was Margaret Lyons from Vulture, tweeted today that the final season should be an all-star season, and I agree.
Oh, my God, yes.
Like, bring back some of the people that got bounced from other seasons, including ones that had, like, better careers than the actual winner. Like, who doesn't want to see Clay Aiken singing this thing again? Me?
You mean, I mean, I do. Senator candidate Clay Aiken?
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting question that Clay Aiken's name brings up, which is this. Do you know what time it is?
I'm aching to find out.
That's game time.
You have no leg to stand on, Sarah.
That's what she said.
No fur.
This is the... You guys done? You need a moment?
We had some inside jokes going from this morning. Never mind.
This is the fourth game time of the season. It is tied across the board, one apiece, for Sarah, for Tara, for valued guests. Today, we will decide who gets the lead. It's very exciting.
That is exciting.
All right. Today's game time comes from someone who earns herself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of their choosing. Today, we are playing Title Carded, will test your knowledge of TV title cards.
Okay.
All right. This is the moment where, in the credits, where the title appears of the show, we're going to be describing those to you. And you guess the show. And you get a point if you guess the show.
Okay.
Taxi.
If you, the listener... Not Taxi. If you, the listener, want to play along and see the title cards as we go through it, go to the episode page on Previously TV, and in the show notes, there's a button that will show you all the picks that we're going to be playing with.
Yes. Oh, that's fun.
So if you don't know what we're talking about, you want to see us describe, you can go there.
Listening in your car, do not do that.
Are we ready to play Title Carded?
Yes.
Let's throw it to Picky.
We will start with Tara.
All right. We're going to go Tara, Sarah, Mata.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
Here we go. First for Tara.
I see a blue sky with stars. It looks like it's nighttime. There's a woman on a broom with a big pointy hat and a cape. And she's flying over buildings.
And now I would reveal our game time creator is Olivia Kwan, who is looking at title cards I gave her. She doesn't know what any of these shows are, so you have to keep in mind that we're seeing this through the eyes of a six-year-old. I cannot vouch for all the information she will be giving you as being accurate. So it's a test of your TV show knowledge and a test of putting yourself into a child's point of view.
Okay.
Tara, what's that show?
Is it Bewitched?
Bewitched.
That's good for 1 point. Here is your first one, Sarah. Starting you all off with some easy ones.
I see a grayish, beigeish background. There's a man in a suit on a chair, and it looks like he has a smoking stick in his hand. And there's words, a red word and a black word.
Sarah, what's that show?
A word. Mad Men?
Mad Men.
A smoking stick.
Oh, that's great.
All right, Matt, here's your first one.
I see a brownish and an orange background. The brownish part has yellowy goldenish designs on it, and there's a frog coming out of one of the letters.
There's a frog coming out of one of the letters.
I'm so embarrassed to say I don't know what that is.
The Muppet Show.
Oh, my God.
I would have guessed Game of Thrones.
All right, back to Tara. That was your first. There's 30 questions, so we got 27 left. We're back to Tara. God.
Yep.
Lots of game left, Matt. Don't worry about it.
Good.
I see something that has a black background. It has letters, and inside the letters, I see two people. One is just standing there looking at something, and the other person is looking out of the letters. I also see kind of like a blue stick. It might be tape on the wall. I see some green moss. It might be trees or grass. I see the blue sky, and I also see it looks like a building.
Oh.
God, I have no idea.
Scandal.
Blue tape on the walls, images and letters.
Sure.
In a building.
All right.
Uh-huh.
Here you go, Sarah.
I see a black midnight sky with some seawater. I see black and white tall buildings, and there are lights reflecting onto the seawater. There are white words, and between some of the words, there's an American flag. And there are some statues in front of the buildings.
Oh. House of Cards.
House of Cards.
Nice.
Nice.
All right, Matt, here you go.
I see. It looks like the world with squares or rectangles in the background. It looks like a light is coming out of it, and there are words that look like they're popping out of the world.
Wow.
Any idea what that show is, Matt?
I'm thinking.
I'm going to say, this is wrong, but Mystery Science Theater 3000.
The Amazing Race.
See?
Oh. All right, we're back to Tara.
Yep.
I see a black sky with lots of tall buildings or condos or hotels and lots of people, cars, and some lights on. And there's a main man of this photo.
A main man, you say?
A main man of this photo.
Oh.
A tough one. Problem is, she did not describe the man.
Oh, God. Gotham? That's terrible.
Louis.
Oh, Louis.
All right.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a hard one. All right. So, Sarah, here you go.
Yep.
I see a blue sky with trees in the background. There are words, and there's an orange car with the number one and a zero. It's 01, the order. It looks like another car is chasing it.
That is how it usually looks. Would that be the Dukes of Hazzard live?
The Dukes of Hazzard.
Yes.
All right, Matt. I got a good feeling you're going to get it on the board.
Don't jinx him.
Yeah,
this is your moment. Everybody be quiet. This is Matt moment.
I see a black background with words, and there looks like there's a washroom sign on it.
Good one.
A washroom sign on it?
Yeah.
That's what that's a Canadian for bathroom.
Yeah, restroom. Yeah.
No, I know what that is.
Oh, okay. It's where we go pee pee and poo poo.
Jeez, I cannot believe I'm shitting the bed on these.
I'm going to play that again for you.
As it were.
Here you go.
I see a black background with words, and there looks like there's a washroom sign on it.
I'm gonna say this is totally wrong. The Office.
The Office.
Yay!
Oh my.
Thank you.
All right, that brings us into our first score break after the ninth question. Let's get our score start.
Tight game. Matt and I are tied with one apiece. Sarah is leading with three.
All right. Ooh, Sarah's 3 for 3 then.
Yep.
Nice.
All right. Ready, Tara?
Yes.
I see a black background, and it has white and green on the photo. It looks like two girls standing on their separate rectangles. And there's also another rectangle, and I think that might also be a girl who is just looking at those girls. They're kind of doing poses. And then I see it looks like he's a hunter, and then there's a word beside him.
Oh my God. I thought I knew it, but then the hunter totally throws me.
What was your first thought?
Well, my first thought was America's Next Top Model because she said squares and posing. Poses. Mm. But a hunter, oh God, I don't know. Charlie's Angels?
Archer.
Oh, right. Oh. Yeah. Why would you show that to her? That's not appropriate.
That's why I showed it to her. She doesn't know what it is. Poses.
Did she have questions?
Yeah. No.
That's
as far
her mother's
as I know,
problem.
There is no fallout from this. All right, Sarah, here you go.
Sorry.
You ready?
Let's go.
I see part of a medal. There's a blue circle in on top with stars, and there's a woman inside the circle. She looks like she's either reading a book or doing some work in a book, and there's a word under it.
It's a hard one. I think maybe your streak might end here. Yeah. Woman in a circle.
Don't jinx her. Stop jinxing people.
I'm not jinxing her. I'm actually setting expectations so that she doesn't feel super bad when she doesn't get it, because I don't think she, A, watches it, and B, would never know it.
Bones.
Veep.
I wanted you to get it so bad, Sarah.
I'm not jinxing
people.
It was
like the Obama campaign?
Yeah, it kind of looks like that.
All right, here's your chance to pull ahead of Tara, Matt.
Okay.
I think that's something we all would like. Here we go.
I see a blue sky with white clouds. It looks like a cartoon. And there are yellow words on it.
I'm going to say Pushing Daisies.
Oh.
Oh.
The Simpsons.
Oh. Your pity awes were really... Like I have a tin cup.
Oh, wait. I'm the dick. All right, Tara.
Yes.
Another one for you.
Yep.
I see a blue cloudy sky with a wall and a fence. There is barbed wire to keep people away from the edge of the fence. There are birds and words, black words and red words.
Is that orange is the new black?
Orange is the new black.
Correct. Nice. All right, Sarah, here you go.
Beavis and Butthead.
Whoops, that one was up. That's okay. I got extras.
Is that one Pushing Daisies?
Oh, here you go. Ready? All right, here you go. Here's your real one.
I see a black background with white words, and they're 3D words, and there are blue shadows on one word, and then red shadows on the other word.
What? Oh, Law and Order.
Law and Order.
Nice.
Correct. Good God.
All right, let's hear her interpretation of Beavis and Butthead.
Okay.
I see a blue background, and I see two boys. They look like they're having a staring contest. One has a blue shirt and blonde hair, and the other one has a gray shirt and braces and brown hair. There are words under their circles.
That one was provided so that she could see the word butthead. All right. So,
and read it, not just see it.
I lost track. Okay. This is for Matt,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Here you go, Matt.
Yep.
I see a blue sky with white clouds and a black sea. I see it looks like a building or a castle and its reflection in the blackness. And there are words. One black bird and one white bird. There's one word up over the water and one in the water.
Ooh.
Hmm.
We got sky. I heard something about sea.
Actually, I've been drawing these.
Building or castle.
Yeah.
Reflections. Oh. Words.
Oh, shit.
If you really want to hear it again, you just have to ask. By the way,
I would like to hear it again.
Here we go.
I see a blue sky with white clouds and a black sea. I see it looks like a building or a castle and its reflection in the blackness. And there are words, one black bird and one white bird. There's one word up over the water and one in the water.
What's that show?
I am going to say that the name of that show
is the following thing, which I will name shortly.
Me stalling for time. Jesus.
You don't know.
I don't know.
Nope. Anybody guess on that one?
No.
Downton Abbey.
Yeah. Okay, back to Tara Ariano.
I see a blue foggy background with a forest. I see a unicorn in the forest. There are words. And in one of the letters of the word, there looks like a little speck of light.
I don't know what show might have unicorns in it, so I'm going to guess Once Upon a Time.
Once Upon a Time.
That's what I guessed.
Yep.
Okay, Sarah, here you go.
I see a blue foggy background. There are hills and trees. It looks like there are chopped down trees in this photo, too. It looks like the sun going down in the background, and on the ground, there is some white words.
Chopped down trees, the sun is going down. Twin Peaks.
Anybody?
Is it Northern Exposure?
It is not. Matt, do you know this? You might know this.
I would have guessed Twin Peaks as well.
Outlander!
Oh, God damn it.
You told her how to say it.
Yep.
That's amazing.
Nice rolled R. That was lovely.
Wow.
She's in French school.
Okay, so this is... Did I skip? No, that was... No, this is Matt's, right?
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
Here
that
we
was
go.
For Sarah.
I see a black background with the moon. There are white words in front of the moon.
I'm going to say The Honeymooners.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
See?
Yeah, we didn't go that deep here. All right. That was our 18th question.
Okay. Matt's still on the board with one. I now have three. Sarah has four.
All right. Still a close game. Anybody's game. Here we go. We continue.
Well, it's two people's game.
No, it's anybody's game.
There's still enough. There's only 1 point per question.
You got to believe in yourself, Matt. That's the trick. Here's a little something to help you. Tara.
Yes.
I see a black background with white words. One of the letters looks like the moon and it's dripping. The moon looks like it has a hammer coming out of it.
Hammer? I'm going to guess The Americans.
The Americans.
Okay. That's what I would have guessed.
Beautiful.
Nicely done.
From context. I remember a moon involved, but whatever.
Well, it's the sickle.
She's six. Yeah. No, I know.
Oh, okay.
I see. Sunset background. It looks like the sun's flowing over some buildings. Some lights in the buildings are off. Some lights are on. And some buildings have some lights on and some lights off. I see a man walking on water, and the words look kind of special. One of the words have jewels, or it looks like little lights.
A lot of description of the windows, but that ending was pretty germane to the to the title card there. I can vouch you watched this. It's a show you
little
know.
Little lights. Sunset. Can I hear it again? I'm sorry.
You definitely can.
I see a sunset background. It looks like the sun's flowing over some buildings. Some lights in the buildings are off. Some lights are on. And some buildings have some lights on and some lights off. I see a man walking on water, and the words look kind of special. One of the words have jewels, or it looks like little lights.
Any idea what that is?
Jewels, or it looks like little lights.
One of the words.
It's not angel. Yeah. It's not house. It's not anything else that has five letters, probably. It's definitely not The Wire. If it were The Sopranos, you'd have mentioned the gun. I don't know what it is. Wait, The Prophet.
Boardwalk Empire.
Ah. Just keeps on not giving that show. God damn.
So sorry. So sorry. Okay, Matt, here you go.
Let's hear it.
I see a brick wall with a window. There are four people. I see three boys and one girl. One of the boys, the boy in the front, is kneeling down. And the girl looks like she's peeking out of a picture frame.
I'm going to say New Girl.
New Girl.
Yay!
All right, Tara.
Yep.
I see it looks like a Lego town with lots of buildings, and all the buildings have brands on them. There are trees and grass, and there are cars along the road.
Is it Silicon Valley?
Silicon Valley.
Nicely done. All right, back to Sarah.
I see a background made out of people. They might be at a restaurant or at a party or at a friend's house, but they're drinking wine and beer out of bottles and glasses.
Out of bottles and glasses.
Yeah,
huh?
Both.
This could be so many things. They're at a party.
Yeah.
Drinking out of bottles and glasses.
Or a restaurant or a friend's house.
Yeah.
Or a friend's house. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Cheers.
Oh, I should use that one.
Oh, I'm so sorry. All right, Kate. Do you know this one, though, Matt?
I see one blue building, one neon green building, and one brownish-orangish building. There are five people standing in front of the neon green building.
Three buildings, five people standing in front of a neon green building.
Five people standing in front of...
Not just green.
Neon green.
Neon green.
Green.
Oh, I'm guessing you guys already know this?
No, I don't.
Nope.
Just really?
It's
okay.
It's funny that she specified neon.
Yeah,
I mean, Dave does because he's running the game, but
this
Dave
is true.
Does, yeah. I would assume.
I am the Alex Trebek smug bastard of Game Time.
I am going to say. Orange. Clearly a workplace comedy. I am going to. I'm gonna throw out. No, you know what? I'm gonna say happy endings.
Bob's Burgers.
See,
close. It was a workplace
very
comedy.
Close.
Well, it was a workplace comedy, so you're right there.
Yep,
that was some good deduction.
Yep.
Back to
which
Tara.
I didn't follow.
Here you go.
Yep.
The background looks like a drawing of two animals. A goose and a deer with a chair and a table and a desk and a mug and a coffee mug and some papers.
This is wrong, but Newhart?
Parks and Recreation.
Ah. All right.
Of course.
Sarah.
A goose and a deer.
Yep.
Put on your thinking cap.
No.
I see a pinkish, purplish sky with gray clouds. I see a car with its red lights shining. And it looks like that the car is driving on sand in the dark sky. I see little trees, or it's an island.
There are little trees in Knight Rider.
Knight Rider.
Way to amp up the suspense, Dave.
There's no freeze, girl. Overturned.
That could be JPEG artifacts for all I know. It'd be interesting to see that photo. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Matt, here you go.
Okay.
I think this is my favorite one.
I see a blue background and pink words. I see a tiara out of light, it looks like. Oh, there is a woman in pink clothes holding flags, and she's standing in front on top of pink words.
Okay. No, I love that. Trying to pick carefully here. I think, no, that's not true. I'm just going to blunder ahead. I think it's Ugly Betty.
RuPaul's Drag Race.
RuPaul's
Drag Race.
RuPaul.
She got it right. Second attempt.
Start your own jeans.
Tara.
Yeah.
Here's your very last question. Are you ready?
Yes.
I see something that has a background. It looks like the sun, and it looks like it has a belt with cool designs. It looks like a plate. Looks like it has eye holes or a special design. And it kind of has, it kind of looks like it has ears and legs. The ears are dragon and a sheep, or is it a lion? And then I also see a giraffe and a moose.
I take it back. That's my favorite
one. Oh, my God.
That's also the first one she did.
Top Chef Safari.
I mean... God.
Any idea what that is, Tara?
None. Benson.
Game of Thrones.
Oh, God, of course.
Oh, boo.
All right, Sarah.
Sarah, you got to get this one because we're currently tied.
Here you go.
Done.
You're ready?
I see a black background with green designs and yellow designs. There are two words. The first two letters of each word is white, and they have a green box around it. And the rest of the word is a bright yellow golden color.
Yep.
That's good clue giving, girl. Yep. Breaking Bad.
Nicely done.
Breaking Bad.
All right, Matt. Here's your last question.
Even she gets it. The colors mean so much on Breaking Bad.
Yeah, she's a real fan of the cinematography in Breaking Bad.
She is.
She should be.
I see a woman. Her face, it looks like it's under a mask, and you can't see the whole face, only the eyes. There are words on under the eyes and over the cheek.
Good luck.
Wow. Dude.
Yeah. I will say, okay, I'll give you this clue, Matt. A show discussed already in this episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to hear it again with that clue?
Yeah, please.
I see a woman. Her face, it looks like it's
under
a mask. And you can't see the whole face, only the eyes. There are words on under the eyes and over the cheek.
Matt says he knows what it is.
I think I know. Is it Homeland?
Guess what?
The Good
You
Wife.
Don't. All right, that was our last question.
Don't.
So let's hear
fun.
The final scores.
All right, Matt had finished with 2. I had 5. Sarah wins with 6 points.
Whoa, nice. Nicely done. Are we ready for our shits and giggles question?
Yes.
Worth 5 Dave points. Oh. Redeemable in the future for who knows what. I know you've all been tracking your Dave points. Are you ready? First person to show the answer gets 5 Dave points.
Okay.
I see snowy mountains with buildings in the background. I see lots of people dressing up. And there are 4 people in the very front, in front and behind a sign. And they're all wearing hats.
Any ideas what that one is?
Four people in snow.
Behind and in front of a sign. They're all wearing hats. It's still running. Long running show. Mm. The network it's on is Comedy Central. There's a lot of stuff going on in this title card.
South Park.
South Park.
Tara with five day points beating
Matt said it too.
Matt by nanoseconds. By nanoseconds. Oh, I'm sorry.
I think let's give it to him because of the lag.
No, you don't have to. Don't pity me.
I'm not. That's the lag. There's the lag is legit.
The lag is real. Take the points. Take
two and a half each.
Trust me.
Fine.
Two and a half each is a good. That's a good. Sarah.
Congratulations, Sarah. Ooh, all right.
Thank you.
That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We did the Monster Mash for season two of Penny Dreadful, and it turned out to be a graveyard smash. I am not happy with that now that I read it. We discussed, for one last time before the truth is known, the case of Don Draper flying the coop, there he is, before going around the dial, with stops at The Good Wife, Nurse Jackie, the following, Finding Carter, and your new favorite 30 Rock character, Jerem.
That's not that much cheese.
We asked, will Dave hate this, or will he walk like an Egyptian when it comes to Spike's summer miniseries Tut? Speaking of things destined to last forever, Matt pitched us the comeback season 2 finale for the canon and achieve immortality. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah was the winner of this week's title card game from Leah and Olivia Kwan. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
seriously, leave my dolls alone.
Sarah D. Bunting.
You knew we'd catch up to you eventually.
And get this, guys, Matt Debenham.
What? Yeah. Is it Frasier?
You ought to know.
It is now.
You're Frasier. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
I feel Mr. Chandler can provide able rescue should we find ourselves suddenly afoul of the old glyph.
Well, I do have a gun belt.
Stop.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.